and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Wallace. Pope Francis has suffered a setback while battling pneumonia. CBS's Chris Livesay has the latest from Rome.
Pope Francis remains in critical condition after experiencing a severe asthmatic respiratory crisis today, necessitating high-flow oxygen and blood transfusions due to anemia and low platelet counts. Despite increased pain, the 88-year-old remains alert, spending the day in his armchair. The Vatican emphasizes he is not out of danger with a reserved prognosis.
Kane University history professor Christopher Bellito says the Vatican is likely anticipating Pope Francis's resignation or worse.
I think it puts people on notice that this event is going to happen sooner rather than later. And, you know, in your mind, you begin to start preparing for it.
Bellito says no one knows who the next pope would be. He's betting it would be someone relatively unknown. A police officer has been killed after responding to a shooting at a hospital in York, Pennsylvania. UPMC Memorial Hospital says the gunman was also killed. No patients were injured. The officer was with the West York Police Department. Before leaving the White House to address the Conservative Political Action Conference, President Trump commented on the six Israeli hostages Hamas released today.
It's disgraceful what's going on there. They're not in great shape, but we've also seen them in worse shape.
The families of the remaining hostages held a protest in Tel Aviv criticizing Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Nahma Weinberg's cousin was a hostage and was killed.
Netanyahu, how is it possible that President Trump and Special Envoy Witkoff are more committed to the return of the Israeli hostages than you are?
Israel is due to release another 600 Palestinian prisoners today. President Trump's job-cutting spree has reached the Pentagon. He's fired the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the chief of naval operations, and the vice chief of staff at the Air Force. CBS's Willie James Inman says they're just the tip of the iceberg.
The Pentagon is expected to fire at least 5,400 probationary workers as part of an initial round of layoffs. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth has also called for plans to offset about $50 billion of the Pentagon's budget over the next 5 years.
One person was killed and two police officers were wounded in a knife attack in eastern France today. Police have arrested an Algerian man they say is an Islamic extremist. He had been on a terror watch list. The man who was killed was Portuguese. The NAACP Image Awards are tonight in Pasadena, California, celebrating entertainers and athletes of color. Former Vice President Kamala Harris will receive their prestigious Chairman's Award. The Wayans family will be inducted into the NAACP Awards Hall of Fame. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. We've had lots of gray days here in Wisconsin, and February is when seasonal affective disorder can really hit hard. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
Nationwide, up to 6% of the population suffers from seasonal affective disorder. People in northern climates are especially affected. SAD is typically a temporary form of depression triggered by lack of sunlight in the fall and winter months. Dr. Shyla Mergane, clinical psychologist at UW Health, says women and younger people tend to experience higher rates of SAD, with symptoms peaking in January and February.
We can find that we're more sluggish, our mood is lower, and we're not getting that kind of exposure to light that really maintains that healthy circadian rhythm.
Mergane suggests aiming for at least 30 minutes a day of sun exposure or supplementing with light therapy at home using a full-spectrum light bulb. Other strategies include getting daily exercise, maintaining a routine, prioritizing self-care, and supplementing your diet with vitamin D3. People experiencing SAD can feel fatigued, have difficulty concentrating, or notice changes in sleep and a loss of interest in activities and socializing. Dr. Rhonda Randall with United Healthcare says boosting social connections is one big factor.
When people are socially isolated, it does have a significant impact, not only on your emotional and mental well-being, but also on your physical health.
She says in some cases, medication and therapy could be effective, so seek help from a mental health professional if symptoms persist. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Central Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly sunny, a little breezy, highs near 27. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a low around 15. Mostly cloudy, mid-30s for Sunday. Some snow or freezing rain Sunday night with lows around 29. And a touch warmer on Monday, partly sunny, 42. It's 30 at our studios.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome RogerEbert.com film critic Mariah Gates for some Oscar talk, and entrepreneur Chad Franker joins the show to talk about a new program to combat loneliness.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Yes, it's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Saturday, one full hour. So happy. Always love the Saturday show. Get to really, you know, kind of lay it out there. Johnny, Jess, you know, get to spend more time with you guys, which is always exciting. I'm going to start with Jess. So, Jess, how's your day going?
My day's been a little bit busy, you know, but that is okay. Tim, I got to tell you, I have been hearing some huge props for our Wednesday class in session about the opt-out movement. And I got to tell you, that has been, it's been some trending news.
Nice. Nice. Well, we, you know, we had a special guest on that show. Yeah, Lacey Slecker, my daughter. So that's awesome. We'll have to talk more about that. So, oh, but Johnny, sure. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. It's, you know, it's been a week. You know, we're full steam into like mid, almost end of February. And so things are cooking. A lot of good things happening. It's my favorite season for what we call on Busted Pencils, you know, essential activities, but many refer to as extracurriculars and sports. But winter sports are my favorite. And so, you know, hockey season is at peak time here. And you know, campus is buzzing. And we've gotten a lot of snow. So it was a late winter here at Washington State. But, you know, we're covered in snow. It's been snowing every day this week. So it's feeling a little bit more like winter. That's always fun. It's been a good week, Tim. It's good to be here with you.
And how are you,
well,
Tim?
You know, hey, I am doing great. Just greater than great. I'll just leave it at that. You know, I'm nothing to announce here yet, but just everybody out there listening, I am doing better than I've done in a long time. Let's just leave it at that. So happy to be here. Loving the fact, though, too, we got two great guests today.
Oh, yeah.
Digging into. So I'm just going to jump right in. First, he's a visionary in the world of aquaponics, turning hands-on learning into a tool for transformation. He's the co-founder and executive director of 100 Gardens and has spent the last 12 years installing aquaponic systems in schools, correctional centers, and communities across the U.S. and Haiti. And welcome to Busted Pencils, Sam Fleming. Sam, how are you?
What's up, Tim? Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it. Hey, let's get your partner there. She is the champion of hands-on real world learning, ensuring that students don't just learn about sustainability, they live it. She is the education director at 100 Gardens and works directly with teachers and students to integrate aquaponics into the classrooms, blending science, nutrition, and environmental stewardship into an experience that sticks. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Kelly Howe. Kelly, how are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing well this evening. Hope you guys are. We're excited to be here. Talk about fish.
Well, talk about face and love it. Okay. All right. So Sam, let's, you know, before we get into the, you know, the hard questions where Johnny and I, you know, we dig in deep and we try, no, 100 Gardens, aquaponics, give us a 101.
All right. Well, let's start with aquaponics. So have you heard of hydroponics before?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So for the layman, hydroponics is growing plants without soil using fertilizers mixed with water. But in an aquaponics system, we're combining hydroponics with aquaculture systems or fish farming systems. So we grow edible freshwater fish, and then their waste provides fertilizer for hydroponically growing vegetables. And then the vegetables use up the nutrients, returning clean water back to the fish. So we call it a symbiotic ecosystem that really demonstrates a lot of nature's systems and allows for people to get a deeper understanding of how the world works. It also produces food, and you can teach just about anything from an aquaponic system.
Okay. And so then that leads to the 100 Gardens. What's 100 Gardens all about?
You want the history, or you want the
a quick 101. I mean, what we're there. We're going to spend a lot more time, though, really digging into 100 Gardens. But just, you know, as you have an opportunity right here. So aquaponics, 100 Gardens, the connection there, maybe.
All right. Great. So, you know, our mission is to empower communities to become smarter, healthier, and more compassionate. And we use aquaponics as the medium to do that. So we're a nonprofit based out of Charlotte, North Carolina, and we partner with schools and correctional facilities and even just communities such as indigenous nations. And we partner with them, and then we build an aquaponic garden that could range anywhere from a classroom size all the way up to a full production size greenhouse. And then after the garden is installed, we provide professional development. We develop lesson plans and learning resources that teachers can use, and then we provide ongoing technical support on sort of an annual contract basis. So right now we're in 24 schools. We have programs in 24 schools and 3 correctional facilities.
Wow, a lot of work going on there. Johnny, just to throw in there, you've had some experience in this field or in this realm a little bit. I mean, remind me of your connection to food and what you were doing in Detroit.
Oh, well, I love this. This is a special guest for us to have on here today, Tim, because I'm like, we're going to be preaching to the choir in terms of what this group does, especially in partnership with schools and community, because I got to see firsthand how this kind of learning really benefits your school and your neighborhood community. And it's, you know, we talk a lot about this on Busted Pencils is like real life learning, you know, class in session this week. You know, we had special guest Lacey talking about the opt out of her standardized tests and the kinds of things she was doing in place of taking tests on those days. Well, you know, I was lucky enough to be part of a school community that had school gardens and had a full, you know, transition from a learning food garden curriculum to aquaponics in that system into my math and science classroom. So it was like really awesome firsthand, big believer in it because we started, you know, learning math and all of our science stuff related to issues in our community. Then as a Detroit teacher, food security, I mean, it's understood is we grew up and lived and we're learning in our school in a food desert. So there was like not access to healthy food, fresh food, let alone that also being culturally relevant, foods that mattered to our community that were part of the recipes like our grandmothers would want to be teaching us to carry on and kind of those fun, healthy, you know, food can be comforting, can be unifying, but it also gives us sustenance for our learning. So it was really natural for us to start doing that kind of those kinds of mini lessons. And it just took off like wildfire and, you know, culminated to a full aquaponics, you know, food garden, almost like an urban farm school. So I got to see really firsthand how awesome that was. But also, as our guests will talk about and know, is also a whole lot of shifts and changes in how we do school and what that teaching looked like and the labor and the way it brought our community together. And I'm going to say it like, I don't need to bury the lead on this. They'll probably give testimony to this. It really changed how I worked as a teacher for the better. I mean, I had all these hesitations early on, like, oh man, what's going to happen in the summer? Oh man, what's it going to be like? How is it going to fit into my school day? But it did. And it changed the way we got together in our school place. So the garden and the fish and everything and all the systems we added started to really vibe with our energy and our energy with that kind of system of almost like we had permaculturalists come in and help us design our curriculum too. So it was like, there was a whole philosophical shift that happened around food that was aligned to our content learning and math that made my day balanced. It really made my day feel not only meaningful in a traditional teaching way, but also that, like, hey, we were eating really well and we were learning life skills. Like, it turned into a lot of entrepreneurial opportunity for local small businesses. A lot of our graduates went into that profession in some capacity, like whether it was distribution, marketing, you know. Food systems are a whole economic dimension that lifts up and empowers our whole community. And bonus, we were learning our math and science right alongside it, and it worked well. So this is right up my alley, Tim, when you brought these guests on. Yes, this is my jam. Yeah. I love this.
Well, you know, speaking of all the things you're saying, so Kelly, you know, you before 100 Gardens, you were a principal, and so you were in this. And reading some of the press on 100 Gardens, actually, you were involved as a principal bringing in 100 Gardens, and now you're, you know, give us a little bit of that. Like, what can is Johnny making this stuff up, or is this what really happens?
I mean, it's what really happens. I was looking for a way to rehabilitate an old dilapidated greenhouse at the school that I had been assigned to principal, and I was looking for something, you know, kind of new and exciting, not just, you know, to grow ferns and plants. And I happened across a newspaper article about 100 Gardens and thought, wow, this is really incredible. As a former middle school teacher, I was into integration of all kinds of subject matter together. And I thought, this is really a great way to do it. And for my particular case at that school, I needed vocational training for my students. So it just, it looked to me like a beautiful marriage of all the things I needed. And I'm so happy that we did it. And that school is still thriving today. Their aquaponics system is still thriving today, 7 years later. So I would say that it worked out well.
Well, that's great. I mean, you know, thinking about this too, and you know, just reminding, you know, the opt-out movement and putting this forward, you know, one of the reasons my daughter, now she's a senior in college, and my son, you know, but we started taking them out of the high-stakes standardized testing because of essentially the focus on that at the expense of real learning, quality learning, interest in engaging, and the types of work that you have here. And in fact, I know after this break, you know, I'm going to give this to both you and Sam to think about it during the commercial here, is, you know, how hard is it for you, Kelly, as a principal or somebody, to work with somebody like Sam and then address the realities where teachers, but when are we going to teach this? And when are we going to do that? And what about the standardized tests? It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. More when we get back.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
I'm Earl Ingram, host of The Earl Ingram Show. We're celebrating Black History Month by sharing some powerful interviews and stories featuring Wisconsin's own trailblazers. We're also listening to you because conversations can make a difference.
Got to be had, and we have to have it on a regular basis, not only on the air, but around the coffee table. I was more optimistic than before than I am now. America's taken a big backward step.
I do try to have that conversation about racial disparity and give small history lessons as much as I can.
Join us to continue the conversations as we stand together and learn together. And let's celebrate Black History Month every month. I'm Earl Ingram.
The Earl Ingram Show on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You guys, if you're watching, I'm doing a little dancing. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Yes, I know my dancing should be outlawed, but you know, occasionally that's what we like to do here. Our guests, Sam and Kelly from 100 Gardens Aquaponics, just breaking in, just kind of looking at this, going into schools. But Sam, I want to give an opportunity though too to give a little bit more of the kind of history and the origins. And so the idea here, 100 Gardens, it was an experiment at first. And I was just wondering at what point, you know, when did you go, wait a minute, there's more here. This has real deep education implications. You know, how did that all come about?
So when I first met Ron Morgan, who was our founder, he was had just gotten back from Haiti back in 2010, an earthquake that killed 200,000 people. And Ron was an urban planner and developer, architect. So he was taken down there by a church to come up with an idea for rebuilding. And he couldn't get past the idea of, like, when the aid runs out, what are these people going to do? So if you know anything about the history of Haiti, it's been deforested. It's really hard to farm there. So he heard about hydroponics and ended up at this store that I was working at. I was managing this hydroponic store. So fast forward a little, me and him become friends, and we built an aquaponic garden in his yard. That was going to be the prototype of what we thought we could send to Haiti. And so as we're operating it, kids all around the neighborhood are like, oh, I want to play with the fish, blah, blah, blah. And they're coming over. So we start teaching these kids what an aquaponic system is. And they're like, well, can we come by and feed it? And I'm like, well, I guess. So here's this clipboard, and I need you to record this pH level. I need for you to write down what the water temperature is. We just gave them like a couple simple tasks. And before we knew it, you know, they were coming over regularly and taking water quality tests. Mind you, they're like 8, 9 years old. And then they started taking vegetables home because they were like, oh, you know, I've been seeing it grow. Can I take this home? They didn't know what mustard greens were or any of this stuff. So, but then we start getting comments from parents on like, what are you guys doing with like the kids in the neighborhood? Because our kids are talking about science and stuff. And then they're bringing home vegetables and demanding that we make salads. And that was when Ron was like, oh my God, like, guys, this is it. Like, we didn't mean to do this, but here we are. So the original idea was, okay, not only are we going to send a garden to Haiti, we're going to build one here in the Charlotte, North Carolina region. And we're going to kind of make them sort of like sister cities, if you will, connect a school in Charlotte with a garden in Haiti and have a conversation go back and forth. And so that's really where it started. And then the weird turn of events, the last week that I was working in the hydroponic store, the North Carolina Department of Public Safety called wanting an irrigation system for an old greenhouse, similar to Kelly's greenhouse story. And I let Ron know, and he's like, Sam, let's see if they want to build an aquaponic system, and then we'll train kids, and we'll send them to Haiti, and we'll change their life. And it was just this crazy idea. And so we invited the representatives from the juvenile correction facility town to see this garden that we had built in Ron's yard. And Ron sat there and he sold them the program. And we got a contract with the North Carolina Department of Public Safety to teach this in juvenile corrections. And that was our first project. And it went really well. And we got a lot of press. And then more schools started inquiring about working with us. And what's kind of crazy is, not until like our sixth year doing this, we were already in probably 6 or 7 schools. That whole time we had zero curriculum, zero lesson plans. we would just work with the school and they would kind of figure it out. So then we were able to build the organization slowly and hire wonderful people like Kelly, who have made us a legitimate player in the education field. And that's kind of the short story how we got here.
Nice. So, you know, thinking about that, it's just really, you know, the idea of that kind of that moment where you went, okay, there's more here than just this. And Kelly, I was thinking about you at what point too, how, you know, you see this, you know, because we were talking about this. School can be really irrelevant to a lot of kids. And what I'm hearing here is what Sam kind of found out by, you know, accident was, wow, they're really interested and they're really learning and it goes forward. How you as an educator, you know, kind of look at this and see this realm and, you know, potentially too, what are some of the complications?
Well, I killed all the fish. and I think maybe our first month of having our first small aquaponic system. So there was that was a complication. Getting the staff members and the teachers over, I think, like Johnny's shock of, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this in addition to everything else that I have to do? And in my particular school, all of our students have IEPs and severe needs. And so there was a lot of convincing them that, you know, number one, of the validity of the program. And then number two, how they could work IEP goals into an aquaponic system. And it was a lot of trust. So I think that once people saw the value of it and really took a minute to like wrap their mind around it, it's really explains itself. And the kids, of course, are in love with taking care of fish and seeing things grow like themselves. And they just took such a shine to it that it was hard for anybody who was involved not to see that excitement. And it was just contagious. So learning, if we just watch the kids, they show us what's important. So that really just kind of organically grew. Mm-hmm. Pun intended, I guess. Yeah.
And I'm digging it, pun intended. Kelly and Sam, this is awesome. You know, there's so many great things about this. And I know we're coming up on a break here. So as we go into the break, I'm just thinking, we come back, if you can both share with our listeners one story, like Sam already shared a little story. Kelly, you've shared some stories, but think of one story of an example of the learning that really stands out for you for our listeners to hear, because we've been plugging this kind of learning on Busted Pencils, and I've been lucky enough to be part of it to see it really work. And, you know, Tim and Lacey were on a class in session this week talking about opt-out and the ways that real life learning just clicks in classrooms for kids. Everything's, you know, dialed in. So think of those stories and be ready to share them with our listeners. We're here, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Hey, listener, if you're ever wanting to join the conversation, though, remember that you can call or text us, or if you have a comment or a question, call or text us at 608-557-8577. We love to hear from you. More Busted Pencils and more of this awesome organic stuff. Listeners, you can dig with us here at Busted Pencils and 100 Gardens.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
CBS News special report. The Vatican says Pope Francis suffered a long asthmatic respiratory crisis today during his hospitalization for pneumonia. He felt more pain today than yesterday and remains in critical condition.
Come era nel principio, or
People in Vatican City are praying for the 88-year-old Pope, who needed high flows of oxygen and blood transfusions. The Pope is said to be sitting up and alert. CBS's Chris Lifsey is in Rome.
This episode adds to a series of health challenges during his papacy, including colon surgery in 2021 and hospitalization for pneumonia in 2023. His current condition is being closely monitored.
Peter Lepiarz is among the Polish faithful outside of St. Peter's Square.
I'm literally worried about his state of health, and I hope he will recover. Definitely, he will come back to his health soon.
The Pope has been hospitalized for 8 days now, and doctors say he will remain in the hospital for at least another week. CBS News Special Report. I'm Michael Wallace.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Bucks beat the Wizards. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks held on to beat the Wizards 104-101 in Washington. The Wizards' Chris Middleton had a chance to tie the game in regulation but missed a shot from the three-point line. Giannis Antetokounmpo asked what are his first impressions of newly acquired Kevin Porter Jr.
These past 2 games I've played with him, he's able to get to his spot, create for others. Defensively, he's so good, knows how to use his hand and his body. Man, I'm not even going to lie to you. I love playing with him. I love him a lot. He's like the steal. You know how you have a steal of the draft? Like we had the steal. That's a steal for sure.
College basketball, number 16th ranked Marquette, losing on the road to the Villanova Wildcats, 81-66. The Golden Eagles have now lost 4 of their last 6 contests. And the Milwaukee Panthers scored a win on the road, 84-74 over the Youngstown State Penguins. The Panthers play at Robert Morris tomorrow at 1 o'clock. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Central Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly sunny, a little breezy, highs near 27. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a low around 15. Mostly cloudy, mid-30s for Sunday. Some snow or freezing rain Sunday night with lows around 29. And a touch warmer on Monday, partly sunny, 42.
It's 30 at our studios.
Hey, it's me time at Chula Vista. Time for you to pamper yourself. Wisconsin's most complete resort experience has everything you want. Fine-tuned for 70 years by 4 generations of the Kaminsky family, Chula Vista can be easygoing with colorful scenic river walks, 18 holes of classic golf, a relaxing spa, or you can go all out in 80,000 square feet of indoor water park. Ziplining through canyon views in Chula's Aerial Adventure Park. And dining comes any way you like it. From pizza to Wisconsin's number 1 ranked steakhouse. More than 600 guest rooms to choose from with $10 million in updates. Chula Vista. Everything you've been wanting. All right here on site. Check it out at ChulaVistaResort.com.
Miles and miles of freshly groomed cross-country and hiking trails. Ski, sled, snowshoe. Warm up at our indoor water park. ChulaVistaResort.com.
The Morning Show on WFHR. It's serious comedy.
Blue Monday has been a thing ever since a British psychologist came up with it 20 years ago.
Today is the day to rewrite the lyrics to Blue Christmas.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'll have a Blue Monday when it's cold.
Nice, nice. That is my new favorite thing.
Yes.
Right there. That was awesome.
See you in the bumpers.
Weekdays from 8 to 10, right here on Locally Grown Radio.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself, surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as we'll look back at the weekend headlines with our friend and contributor, Matt Flynn, an attorney and 2-time chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Don't miss it.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Is it for the money? No, it isn't for the fun. It's a plan, a scam, a diagram. It's for the benefit of everyone. You gotta have a little respect. Subterranean ideals.
Welcome back to Custom Pencils, toilet education talk, educated educators talking education. Yeah, we're doing it for the cause. Love that song. I could just keep having it play and listen to it, but we got to get back to this awesome conversation, not unrelated to the cause, because everybody eats and everybody, especially in schools, should be learning. And there's learning and learning about what we eat and how we get our food and the importance of food production and all of the steps of when things grow and they get harvested and they get prepared and we eat them and we are our healthiest, best selves. It's all important. It's all part of being in a community in democracy. Love this learning. We have special guests with us today from 100 Gardens chilling on this chilly Saturday. So hopefully, listener, you're staying warm and chilling with us. But Kelly and Sam, I'll have Sam, you start. But I asked you before we went to break to think of a kind of a standout story from your work with 100 Gardens. And I think listeners would love to hear it. So Sam, you share us a story first, then we'll kick it to Kelly.
A story that kind of changed the way that I thought about our mission was early on when I started teaching in the juvenile correctional facility. We had a kid named Bradley, and Bradley was on an IEP and was on like an alternate path to toward his diploma. And he was always really lazy in his classes. And he would say, "It's because I'm stupid." That's what he would always say. But we all knew that, or at least I knew teaching him, that he was probably more just lazy and disinterested. But he had been on an IEP his whole life. And he shined so much in the aquaponics program that when the assistant principal came down and saw him working, she was like, "We need to reassess like how we classify this kid." And they took him out and they put him in the reg ed classes. And within a year and a half, he had his high school diploma. So his entire life, he had been deemed like a, you know, a lower performing student who may not have the faculty to go the regular route. And when he shined so much in the aquaponics system, it really like changed how everybody viewed him. And he ended up getting his high school diploma. And I reference him in my TED talk because he's the one who said, "I want to open a motorcycle shop when I get out of here." Not because, and when people asked him, like, "Why would you want to do that when you have all these great aquaponics skills?" And he wasn't interested in aquaponics, but he realized for the first time in his life that he could do complex things and he could make something happen and he could create something. And he was into motorcycles, and it changed his outlook on life. So that was an amazing transformation I saw. Was seeing him get his high school diploma, being taken off the IEP, and then, you know, having that testimonial at the end.
Man, I love that. That's you know, music to my ears and to, I'm sure, our listeners, you know, some testimony, some good story around how when we change how we do school, start to learn different things that we probably might have had a hunch about our students, but then seeing them be successful because, you know, we moved away from the traditional curriculum and into something that was meaningful, engaging, and let's just call it what it is, fun, right? So that's awesome, Sam. Love that story. Kelly, standout story for you to share with the listeners.
I have so many because now I've worked in different levels, different, you know, elementary all the way to post-secondary with aquaponics systems, but one that I'd like to share is about an intern. We had our first high school interns a year ago, last spring semester. And at the end of the internship, we had a little celebration. And the two of our interns that were speaking, one of them was a two-sport high school varsity athlete, a wrestler, football player. And he had been interning with us and working at two of our different aquaponic gardens, one at his school and one at another location we have. And when they asked him to share a few words about what the internship had meant for him, he said, "When I go into the greenhouse, when I am working with the fish and the plants," he said, "I'm just so calm." Mm-hmm. He said, it's like I forget about all of my stress. I'm not thinking about wrestling. I'm not necessarily thinking about football. I'm not thinking about what am I going to do when I graduate. He said, it allows me to just relax and be in the moment. And of course, this was post-COVID, post-remote learning, post all those things. And for me to hear, you know, a high school junior, a male, talking about the way that he felt and how he was more self-aware just from being in and around the garden, I was like, well, there it is right there. I mean, it's that to me was just so moving that number one, he had that awareness, and number two, that he felt comfortable in sharing that. If you've spent any time with high school students, that's not a response you get a lot of times. So that's one of the standout moments for me.
You know, Kelly and Sam, and so these testimonials, they make me really think about then too. It's kind of like, you know, this big question. So why do we continue though to insist on, you know, what Johnny and I say, you know, schooling, you know, the curriculum, the rows of desks, the separating kids by ability levels, the siloed curriculum? I mean, I know that's like a, you know, in one way a hard question, but at the same time, it, you know, it's just because the power of just those two testimonials would think would move people to go, well, then we need to reimagine everything or think about this, because, you know, the idea of a student who, you know, it wasn't an IEP. They were disinterested and they were telling us loud and clear. We might not have been listening the right way until we saw this. Or you said, you know, an area of stress reduction. We have a partnership with some other podcasters, Educators Amplified, and they're always really coming at this going, you know, why is school so stressful? We add to the stress that these kids bring to their daily lives with these academic initiatives. The, you know, again, back to the opt-out movement, my daughter and my son, that stress of performing in what could be kind of meaningless academic tasks by those who are in control versus what I'm hearing, you know, Sam, you and Kelly kind of talking about. And I, you know, again, so I'm going to give it to Kelly first this time, and then we'll come back to Sam. Kelly, just thoughts about my kind of random musing there.
I think in listening to Johnny speak as well, and something that at 100 Gardens that we're always trying to like really wrap our minds around is that once you have exposed the students to an experience like aquaponics, where they're managing an ecosystem, they see the part they play. They see the interdependence of the fish on the plants and the plants on the fish. Then it really does cause them to have a new way of thinking about themselves, about their place in society, about the role they play in food production, in the sustainability of the earth, of themselves. And it causes them to have that thought that maybe they've never had before. We see this even in our elementary students, that you would never think that a first grader could explain in their own language the processes of how an aquaponics system works. And you know, they can do it. They get to say the word poop a lot, which makes them all happy and makes us laugh. But just the fact that they have this recognition, much like LaDarren had in his internship program, that there is another way to think about myself and where I fit in and what my impact is on the environment and other people around me. So I think to me, that's really the remarkable thing that I've found in aquaponics.
Yeah. Sam, you know, so, and you're coming at this, like you said, totally different, not the non-educator role and just kind of seeing this, you know, the critique I was kind of putting out of traditional academic education, you know, where maybe let's make this a little bit of autobiographical, you know, where were you as a student, and does this kind of make sense, you know, this discovery learning, or however we want to frame it, you know, did you have these feelings when you were a student, you know, learning all the academics? You know, give me your sense of the world.
Yeah, I think somewhat. You know, I was, by the time I was a decent student, I had somewhere between A's and C's all the way up through 10th grade. And then I went to C's and F's 11th and 12th grade. And, you know, when I really reflect on it, you know, part of me like wants to be hypercritical of the way our school environment was. But at least back then we still had like band, and there were like lots of like club activities, and the humanities were a little bit more a part of schools when I was in there. But you know, I didn't go to college because I was so fed up with being in school. And it's funny to say this, but I was so eager to start working. I wanted to get my life started right away at a high school. And so I think, like, you know, there's a lot of good things about school, and and we've come a long way in literacy and all that compared to 100 years ago. It's kind of going backwards now. But I think, like, you know, it would be, I think bringing more hands-on activities is obviously really important. And school's also just kind of long. I mean, it's a long day for kids. And I think, not to get too deep into like societal stuff, but like, it's, we're also babysitting children for the full work day of both parents being at work all the time. And, you know, so school has taken on a different function than what it used to be 50 years ago. So I think there's a lot of things, like bigger things that impact education.
I mean, for sure. We know that in that sense. You know, here's now there's a big transition. It's not a Tim bomb, Jess and Johnny. So relax. I'm not, but just thinking about this, you know, so we have a list, you know, a listener out there right now. They're a principal, they're a building leader, they're a school board member, and they're like getting jazzed. They're like, wow. I mean, they're talking about this. I want to bring it to my school. And I think some of the questions, you know, let's be real practical. You're like, you know, so what does it take? What does a school need to do? What is the infrastructure required? And how much does it cost? And holy crap, Jess, really? We're at the 2 minute. Oh, right. My goodness.
Well, this is going to be a good exercise. So here's the thing. There's basically two ways you can do this. The first, and that we support. The first one is, if you have a greenhouse, we can put a system in there. That's going to all in be about $30,000 for the hardware. You're going to get an awesome piece of an awesome garden that increases the brand of your school. And then it costs about $10,000 a year to maintain a program, get all the professional development, support, access to materials. And we actually assign a staff member to your school to really give you the care. If you don't have a greenhouse and you want to put it in your school, we put large systems in schools, and that system costs about $16,000, and the support package is the same. But here's where the real value is. We're committed to finding schools who want to create smarter, healthier, and more compassionate kids, period. And if you have that same goal in mind, we can help you get there. We have the training figured out. We got the hardware figured out. We have the support figured out. So we're really looking for mission-aligned partners that we can work with. And I'll stop there. And you can find us at 100gardens.org.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're going to make sure that, you know, the link in the podcast, 100gardens.org, if they're thinking about it, reach out to Sam Kelly. We'll also have their email so that you can get them. Sam Kelly, 100 Gardens, thanks for busting pencils with us.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate you guys and what you do.
Ah, awesome. Hey, Johnny, Tim, and Jess, we'll break it down when we get back.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Wisconsin's next major election is already here. The race for state Supreme Court is ramping up with just a few weeks to go before the April 1st general election. Much like the race 2 years ago, this will determine the balance of power on the court. If Susan Crawford wins, the court remains in liberal control. If Brad Schimmel wins, the court flips back to a right-wing majority. But there are a number of differing dynamics from the race in 2023. That race, won by Janet Protasiewicz, was the culmination of a years-long effort for liberals to win control of the court. Now they're playing defense to keep that majority. This also begins a run of 6 years in a row with a race for Wisconsin Supreme Court on the spring election ballot. Because of which justices will be up in coming years, if Crawford wins this year, the court will likely remain in liberal control until at least 2028. Find more bigger picture analysis of the race in my latest column at the Recombobulation Area.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Great guests, Sam and Kelly from 100 Gardens Aquaponics. The full deal cycle, plants dropping nutrients to the fish taking the nutrients, pooping, sending the poop back to the plants. Hey, I'm just doing my first grader impression the way Kelly talked about it.
Spot on.
Come on. It's perfect. You know, that's the system. And that's the way a first grader would explain it. And I really liked when Kelly said that about a first grader being able to, because it's going to be in a different language, but the abilities that are there. And so often in schooling, we really limit what kids can do because of what we think about, you know, age appropriateness and all those things. It's like, hey, guess what? They can do this stuff. So I just love that, Johnny. But I know you have had a lot more experience with this. So, you know, kind of break it down a little bit from your point of view.
Well, Tim, you know, I'm all about democracy. I'm all about community. And when we bring those two things into the same sentence in a conversation and we mean to align our schools to that, like how do we, you know, strengthen democracy and our community together? You know, this is one great way when we talk about things like project-based learning or real-life learning or the kinds of ways we can engage our learners in not only skills that are, you know, meaningful to their life, but to their career pathways and how that also strengthens the local, right? Well, there are two things that stood out to me as an educator, you know, in that realm, and that was that everybody eats. Right. And so food is one of those big unifying principles around curriculum and strengthening community and democracy. And the other one was that we are bodies of water. And those two things align to all the content areas. Like we can do our English language arts learning around that. You know, we can do our science goals, our science learning, our math learning, you know, our social studies learning. That these are large unifying principles that we can build our curriculum around. And do so in partnerships with experts in our community, like 100 Gardens came on today, and we're talking about the ways they support the teachers, but the ways they also provide support around those, the skills that are necessary to understand and maintain, you know, and sustain an aquaponic system. Or, like, I love how Kelly talked about it, a really diverse learning environment. Because, Tim, oftentimes when we think about our classrooms, we think about schools. We think about them in really human-centered ways and humans learning from other humans. That's either students teaching other students or the human being a teacher passing on information to their human students. And we don't really think about diversity broadly in our classroom. And Kelly touched on that interconnectedness and the way she shared a story of a high school, you know, junior who said, you know, I just feel really calm. I feel like I can come into this space and, you know, and things are moving at a different speed. Things are being communicated differently. Well, I'm a big believer, and that happens when we really embrace diversity in our classrooms. And I don't just mean cultural diversity. Oh, that's really important. I mean biodiversity. You think about the ways that the plant life, the diverse plant life, and the diverse, you know, water species, you know, we can talk whether they're tilapia or whether they're salmon or the fish that are in our aquaponic system contributing to it.
become a really living ecosystem where we're also learning interdependence, interconnection, and we're learning about how to communicate together across diverse species, which helps us be better democratic citizens. How we learn from, communicate with, depend on, and are part of a system with each other. So it's a win-win-win all the way around. I love what 100 Gardens is doing, but I especially love what schools and teachers all around our country are doing. Hey, if you're listening and you want to connect with an organization like 100 Gardens, again, we have their connection in our description of the podcast. So you can download this after you listen to it today. You can get that information. You can reach out to 100 Gardens. They can help you with this process, right? That's what they're specializing in. But wherever you are, hey, if you're a local Wisconsin listener, right? I mentioned as a Detroit teacher, the excellent opportunities I've got to have teaching this. Well, I learned it in Milwaukee from a guy you're probably familiar with locally, Will Allen, founder of Growing Power. That's a great organization that connects all these dots, talks about when we center food in our curriculum and learning, our community gets stronger, right? We share intergenerational knowledge across cultures. We have a rich, deep history in food and the food traditions and sharing it, growing it, all those things. So we're really strengthening our curriculum all the way around. And so there's lots of good opportunities. I got to be part of an organization, the Southeast Michigan Stewardship Coalition. SEMIs, they have a network of schools doing this work all around the Great Lakes. So it's just really good work that, you know, Tim does what we talk about here on Busted Pencils, makes that shift from schooling to education, where we learn together, and especially not only learning together, but growing together in really healthy ways.
Oh, and now for your moment of zen. What most of us must be involved in, whether we teach or write, make films, write films, direct films, play music, act, whatever we do, has to not only make people feel good and inspired and at one with other people around them, but also has to educate a new generation to do this very modest thing, change the world.
Hey, thanks for listening to Busted Pencils. And you can grab these podcasts and other special Busted Pencils content on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course on the Civic Media website or wherever you get your pods. Hey, and don't forget to find homeroom on Monday, class in session on Wednesday, and free throws and face-offs on Friday. And keep busting pencils.
And keep busting them.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Pat Kreitlow
will not be around Monday morning. Luke Mathers will handle a Civic Media Mornings review of weekend headlines as he and Greg hold down the fort.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow, weekday mornings starting at 6.
No more mold, no more damage, no more slipping and hurting. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a Never-Clear glass treated door. BCI Bath and Shower, interest-free financing options. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115. 800-329-4115.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is Locally Grown Radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Wallace. There are growing concerns about the health of Pope Francis. CBS's Chris Livsay is in Rome with the latest.
Pope Francis's condition remains critical after suffering a prolonged respiratory crisis earlier today, according to the Holy See. The 88-year-old pontiff required high-flow oxygen and blood transfusions after tests revealed anemia and low platelet levels. Doctors say he was in more pain than yesterday but remained alert, spending much of the day seated in his armchair.
The Pope was hospitalized with double pneumonia 8 days ago. Elon Musk now says all federal employees will have to answer emails explaining what work they did last week. He says failure to respond will be taken as a resignation. President Trump praised Musk while addressing the Conservative Political Action Committee this afternoon.
Elon is doing a great job. He's doing a great job.
Trump said more job cuts are coming as he looks to trim the federal budget.